This morning's class is titled The Chumrization of the Jewish World. And I'd like to take an honest look at the role of chumrah, stringency, in Jewish law and Jewish life. As the title implies, chumrah, or stringency, has taken over in recent decades. I once saw a hat that had stitched onto the front, "I've got a chumrah that you never even heard about." And it's funny because it's so true. You know, in rabbinic literature, there's a concept called a gezeira she'en hatzibul yachol la'amod ba, a decree that the community cannot uphold. And if the sages see that there's a decree, there's a rabbinic institution or injunction that the community cannot uphold, so that decree is repealed. Today, as my Rebbe says, it's a kula she'en hatzibur yachol la'amod ba. People can't handle leniencies. It's a joke. But somehow people today are uncomfortable with leniencies, with being lenient, with being mekil. Maybe it's a social pressure. Maybe it's born out of fear or anxiety. Maybe it comes from a lack of understanding. But people want to be machmir. It's a tendency today. And some people make the mistake of equating chumrah with frumkeit. And that's a problem.
I think it's social pressure more than anything, in my opinion.
But what really is chumrah? When is it appropriate to be machmir? And when is it inappropriate to be machmir? These are some of the questions that we shall explore together this morning. How do you define chumrah?
The call of duty.
Beyond the call of duty, okay. You wanted to say something in the back?
Being unnecessarily strict.
Being unnecessarily strict? Okay. Is being strict ever necessary?
Depends.
Okay. Okay. Yeah?
Lifnei mishurat
hadin. Going above and beyond what's required. Okay. Yeah?
Materialism, which is a chomer.
Okay.
And as a balance to the chumriyot, we have a tendency to, so to speak, say, "I'm really holy. I'm not into all this chumriyot. I want a chomer."
Okay. So you're probably familiar with the concept of safek deoraita lechumra. When there's a doubt concerning a biblical law, we're stringent. And safek derabanan lekula, concerning rabbinic law, we can be lenient. That's when we have a sfeika d'dina. That's when there's a halacha that one is not clear about. One is misupak, one is in doubt as to the halacha, or perhaps as to the circumstances of the issue itself. Sometimes the circumstances themselves provide a doubt. In that case, if it's a biblical law, we're strict. If it's rabbinic law, we're lenient. But that's part of the halachic process. That's when you have a safek. That's sfeika d'dina. The type of chumrot that we're talking about this morning are when you're not in doubt, when you're clear as to what the halacha is, but you choose to take on an additional stringency. And we'll see if it's necessary or unnecessary. Okay? Chumrot that are extra legal, so to speak. That's what we'll be dealing with this morning. So there's a famous passage in the Ramban, Nachmanides' commentary to the Torah, on the pasuk of Kidoshim Tihyu, "You shall be holy." What does it mean to be holy? So Ramban explains it means to separate yourself from what is even maybe permissible according to the letter of the law. Okay? What's called prishut, to be prushim, to separate ourselves a little bit, because as he explains, one can, in theory, follow all of the laws of the Torah and nevertheless be a naval birishut haTorah. One can somehow be disgusting, for lack of a better word to define naval, in the eyes of the Torah. You can follow the letter of the law and still somehow not be within the spirit of the law. So the Ramban writes, and it's pretty obvious. You can think about it. A person can eat glad kosher food, but eat like a pig and overeat and be messy. Or a person can drink the finest kosher wines, but be a drunkard. Okay, so that's not within the spirit of the law. So the Ramban writes, Lefikach, therefore, Bahakatuv, the Torah comes, the Pasuk comes at the beginning of Parshat Kiddushim, Acharei Shepiret HaIsurim She'asar Otam Legamre. After the Torah gives us all the forbidden relationships, all the forbidden things in Parashat Acharei Mot, V'tziva B'davar Klali She'niyeh Prushim Min HaMutarot. And the Torah here gives us sort of a general guideline. Kiddushim Tihiyu, he explains, to be holy is to separate from even what is permissible. We're not talking about things that are asur. The Torah already enumerated things that are prohibited. Now we're talking about being holy within what is permissible. And he goes on to continue. He cites the Gemara in Brachot that says that Talmidei Chachamim should not be intimate with their wives constantly, like chickens are, you know, constantly having relations. And he also cites the concept of a Nazir, that Nazir sanctifies himself by abstaining from alcohol. And according to the Ramban, these things are positive. Taking on additional stringencies are not unnecessary, but in fact, they're necessary to lead a holy life. The Gemara in Masechet Brachot, in fact, suggests that we receive Hashem's favor by going beyond the letter of the law, by going lifnim mishurat adin, by going above and beyond, going that extra mile, so to speak. And the Gemara says, and this is on Daf Chaf, עמוד ב' מסכת ברכות, אמרו מלאכי השרת לפני הקדוש ברוך הוא, the ministering angels said before God, ריבונו של עולם, master of the world, כתוב בתורתך, it says in your Torah, אשר לא יישא פנים ולא ייקח שוחד. Hashem doesn't turn his face to favor anyone, he doesn't take any bribes. Hashem doesn't favor. And nevertheless, right? V'halo ata nose panim liYisrael. The angels ask, but God, don't you favor the children of Israel? Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, Yisa Hashem panav elecha. Hashem will lift up His face to you. Here we have Hashem favoring us. So what does it mean? Amar lehem. So God, so to speak, says to the angels, V'chilo sa panim liYisrael. Shekatavti lehem b'Torah, what do you mean? Why shouldn't I favor the Jewish people? I wrote in my Torah, right? It's written in my Torah, V'achalta v'savata uverachta et Hashem Elokecha. You shall eat, you will be satiated, and then you will bless Hashem your God. Which means that before one blesses God, before one says, let's say, Birkat HaMazon, we require svia. You have to be full. And nevertheless, Hashem, so to speak, continues, V'hem midakdim al atzmam ad kizayit v'ad kebetza. Even if you eat a small piece of bread, you wash, you make hamotzi, you say birkat hamazon, even if you are not completely full, even if you haven't eaten kidei sviya, you still say birkat hamazon. So what this Gemara is saying is that Hashem favors us because we go above and beyond, because we're machmir, so to speak. We've accepted upon ourselves the stringency of benching having just eaten a kizayit. It's interesting. So it seems like going lifnim mishurat hadin, above and beyond, is praiseworthy, is appropriate, is it wins God's favor. And if you look in the response literature, she'elot u'tshuvot, you find often that while the poskim may be lenient, there is a little disclaimer at the bottom. Whether it be Maran HaRav Ovadia Yosef, or maybe Rav Moshe Feinstein, in their great works of responsa, they'll put a little asterisk, so to speak, at the very bottom. They'll say, I'm permitting this. However, hamachmir tavo alav bracha. One who is stringent, he should receive a blessing. May God bless him. In other words, if you want to take a stringency upon yourself, if you don't want to rely on this leniency here, gizim dehei. And it's praiseworthy. Hashem should bless you. You find Lashon like a Baal Nefesh, someone who has a Nefesh, has a Neshama, someone who's, I would define it as being spiritually sensitive. Someone who has a spiritual sensitivity, for instance, may choose to be Machmir, may choose to be strict. You find this language in the responsa literature. So it would appear that being strict, being Machmir, is a good thing. And yet, as we know, it's not so simple, right? The Ramban mentioned the Nazir who abstains from wine. But the Nazir, after the culmination, or upon the culmination of his Nazirut, he brings a Korban Chatat. Why? Right? There's something, and we'll see, the Ramban will talk about this in a moment. There's something negative about taking on stringencies. Maybe that's not what the Torah wants from us. So it's not so pashut. I mentioned the Rambam, a very, very important passage in the Rambam in Hilchot Deot. The Rambam, of course, always stresses balance. The Shvil HaZahav, the golden mean, Kav HaEmtza'i. And here, at the beginning of the third chapter of Hilchot Deot, the Rambam stresses the importance of balance in our service of Hashem, in our religious experience, and specifically concerning how we approach stringencies. And he writes, Shema yomar adam, lest one say, ho'il, v'akina, v'atava, v'kavod, v'chayotze behen. Right? These things like jealousy and desire for honor, right? As the Mishnah says, they take a person out of this world. It's a derech ra'ah. It's a bad way. Hein motzin et adam min ha'olam. Lest the person say, efrosh mehen biyoter. I'm going to stay far away. I'm going to separate myself exceedingly from these things. Ve'et rachek latzad ha'acharon. And I'm going to go to the complete opposite extreme, ad shelo yochal basar v'lo yishtei yayin, until I'm not even going to eat meat, and I'm not going to drink wine, v'lo yisa isha, and I'm not going to get married, I'm not going to marry a woman, right? It sounds like what?
A monk.
Right? It sounds like a monk. Judaism is not about asceticism. Judaism is not about living in some monastery, in some cloister. V'lo yishtei bedira na'ah, I'm not going to sit in a nice home. I'm not going to live in a nice home, right? I'm going to, what they call a vow of poverty, right? V'lo yilbash malbush na'eh. I'm not going to wear nice clothing. Ela hasak v'atzemera kasher. I'm just going to wear sackcloth and tough wool and the like. Kigon, like Kohane Akum, like the priests of the Gentiles. Gamzo derech ra'ah hi. This is also a wrong approach. Mm-hmm. And it's asur, it's prohibited to go in that direction. Rambam says that Judaism is not about asceticism. It's not about refraining from the material world. It's about being involved in the material world. It's about engaging the material world, the modern world. It's about ultimately transforming the physical into Kedusha, right? Bringing out the Kedusha that's therein, that's inherent. V'hamahalech b'derech zo nikra chote. One who goes in this way is called a chote, a sinner. Strong language. Sha'arei omer b'nazir, as it says by a nazir, right? The Torah says, v'chiper alav me'asher Chata al hanefesh. He needs an atonement for seemingly having sinned. Amru chachamim. Our sages said, Uma, im nazir, shelo parash, ela min hayayin tzarech kapara. The nazir who only removes himself from one thing, from wine, right? If he needs an atonement, Hamonea atzmo mikol davar v'davar al achat kama v'chama. Someone who removes himself from many things, how much more so does he require an atonement? I'll take questions at the end. Lefichach, therefore, tzivu chachamim, therefore our sages commanded, shelo yimna adam atzmo ela midvarim she'me'atu ha-Torah bilvad, that a person, don't put additional stringencies on yourself, just take on the stringencies or the restrictions that the Torah gave you. Don't prohibit yourself from things through different types of vows. Different types of vows on things that are permissible to you. Kach amru chachamim. This is what the sages said, and this is so important. Here the Rambam is quoting from the Yerushalmi, from the Talmud Yerushalmi, Masechet Nedarim, where the sages ask, Lo dayecha mash asra Torah? Not enough? What the Torah prohibits you from? Not enough from what the Torah restricts you? Ela shata oser alecha dvarim achreim? You choose to take on additional restrictions and prohibitions? V'klal hazeh, Elu shemit anim tamid, enam b'derech tova. Under this rubric, you find those who fast often. That's not a good thing. V'asruch chamim, our sages prohibited she'e adam misagef atzmo b'tanit. Sages prohibited someone from torturing himself through fasting. V'al kol advarim ha'elu, v'chayotzi behem tziva shlomo v'amar. And this is very powerful. The pasuk from, this is a pasuk from Kohelet. Al tehit tzadik harbe. Al tit tzadik arbe. Don't be such a tzadik. Wow, right? So Kohelet. Don't be such. Al tit chacham yoter. Don't be so smart. Don't be too wise. Okay. So the Rambam here is stressing balance in our religious observance and really decrying against taking on additional stringencies and restrictions which the Torah did not require of us. For many of the custom, before Kol Nidre, reciting various confessions, as Tfilat Zaka, various Tfilot. So one of the confessions that's printed in the Machzorim is the Vidui of Rabbeinu Nisim Gaon. And there, there's a line that's so striking. And one part he talks about the fact that, you know, Hashem, I'm sorry if I've et asher tiharta timeti, what you said is pure, I made impure. V'asher timeta tiharti, what you said is impure, I said is pure. In other words, what you said is prohibited, I did. What you said is permissible, I didn't do. So, a few lines down, he says, Et asher hekalta hechemarti, where you were lenient, I was strict. Now this is a vidui, this is a confession. This is a confession, you know, upon doing something, ostensibly doing something wrong. He says, where you were lenient, Hashem, I was strict. V'asher hechemarta, where you were strict, hekalti, I was lenient. As we'll see, sometimes being too strict in one area,
and too lenient in another.
Right. Often one ends up being lenient in another area. But here you see that Rabbeinu Nisim says we have to confess for being too strict. So that's serious. It's serious. And sometimes being too strict is just plain silly. It's just narishkeit. The halacha is amitzta'er patul min hasukah. Someone who's uncomfortable, right? So someone who's uncomfortable, he's exempt from sitting in the sukkah. We're all familiar with that concept, whether it's heat, whether it's rain. In the States, it was cold, right? Here, the problem is it's too hot. Maybe there are bees. Here, it's perfect. Everything's perfect here. I agree with you 100%. I agree with you 100%. But But mitzta'el patur min ha-sukkah. Someone who's uncomfortable, that's a lacha. He's exempt from sitting in the sukkah. The sukkah is a beautiful mitzvah. Hashem wants us to enjoy sitting in his presence. What if it rains, right? So,
no.
Well, so the Shulchan Aruch discusses this. You have to wait, maybe you don't have to wait. And let me find this source right here. So the Shulchan Aruch in Orach Chaim Siman Tafresh Lamed Tet is discussing the concept of rain on Sukkot. And there, the Rama makes a famous statement. Rabbi Moshe Isserles, who lived in Krakow, 16th century, makes a very famous statement. He says, V'chol ha-patur min ha-sukkah, v'eino yotze misham, anyone, and again, this is said in the context of when it's raining, anyone who sits in the sukkah and is patur, is exempt from sitting in the sukkah, v'eino yotze misham, and doesn't leave, eino mekabel alav scha, does not get reward for sitting in the sukkah,
no.
Right? And not just that, v'eino ela hedyotot. Hedyotot. He's being a simpleton. He's being silly. It's narishkeit.
Stupid.
I don't like to say stupid. You know what I mean. You get the gist of it. It's hedyotot. Yeah. So sometimes being machmir, being strict, is silly. And we'll talk about in a little bit a chassid shoteh. You know, someone who's so pious. You know, it's taken to a level of silliness. He's an imbecile. It's really a false piety. Person says, I want to be strict. It's sukkahs. I want to sit in the sukkah. I don't care if it's raining. I want to sit in the sukkah. That's hedyotot. So are chumrot good? Are they bad? There appears to be, in the sources, a tension here. You know, on the one hand, the Ramban says, Kidoshim tihiyu requires prishut. It requires taking on stringencies. Right? The first Mishnah in Avot says, Asu siag la Torah. Right? Make a fence. Take on personal restrictions. That's how you get to piety. That's how you get to coming close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's how you get to Kiddushah, to being holy. However, the Rambam is uncomfortable with this, and Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon is uncomfortable with this. And sometimes being strict is being a hedyot. So what are the parameters? When is it good to be machmir? When is it inappropriate to be machmir? So I'd like to look with you at some of the parameters. There's a danger in being stringent if the lines get blurred between what is actually required and what is chumrah. Between what is the din and what is the additional stringency. It's dangerous if one distorts halacha or confuses chumrah with halacha. And there's a very powerful Rashi at the beginning of the Torah, a very famous Rashi. I'm sure you're all familiar with it. That Chava gets herself into trouble with the snake. He's able to trick her, so to speak. He's able to win her over, to seduce her, because she adds on seemingly additional restrictions to the Tzivui Hashem. Right? So, right? Remember what Chava tells the snake? How does she describe the prohibition?
Don't touch the tree.
Right. Vatomer ha'isha el anachash. The woman said to the serpent, Mipri etz hagan nochel. Right? We're allowed to eat from any tree from the garden. Umipri ha'etz asher betoch hagan, but from the tree that's in the middle of the garden. Amar Elokim lo tochlu mimenu. God said, don't eat from it. Vilo tigubo. And don't even touch it. Pen tumutun. Lest you die. Now, did Hashem ever prohibit her from touching it?
No.
Right? And Rashi cites the famous Midrash. Hosifa ala tzivui. She added on to the commandment. Lefichach. Therefore, ba'al idei geraon. It came to actually taking away from the commandment. Hu shenemar, this is the pasuk, cites a pasuk from Mishle, al tosif al devarav. Don't add to his words. Don't add to Hashem's words. Sounds an awful like, awful lot, like the Rambam. Right? Don't take on additional restrictions. The Rambam quoted the Yerushalmi. What's not enough? Not enough what the Torah already prohibits you to do? You want to take on additional restrictions? You see, this is the chait Adam HaRishon. This is the first sin. This is and what brought it about, seemingly? Chumrah! Uh-oh.
It's a mystery portion, by the way.
But what's dangerous, I'll come to you in a minute, what's dangerous is, I think here, and I think the lesson here is confusing chumrah with halacha, when the lines get blurred. Rav Samson Rafael Hirsch, in his commentary to this pasuk here, he amplifies this notion, the danger of adding additional stringencies. So it has to be clear, what is the Ikar Hadin? These are the parameters. What is it, Tzivoy Hashem? And then, if a person understands that in a deep way and then wants to be strict, okay, Gesundheit. You also have to be careful, and we touched upon this a little before, that sometimes when you're machmir in one area, you end up being mekil in another area. And there's a concept of a chumra habali de kula, a stringency that comes at the expense or that leads to a leniency. And without getting into all the different halachot, I mean, I have, you know, a lot of examples here. My notes, a litany of different passages. But I'll share with you instead a story that I think illustrates this best. When I was living in Passaic, New Jersey, I remember going to this communal chametz burning on Erev Pesach. Everyone's coming there with their chametz, with their garbage, and the fire department, it's not like it is in Hanov, where kids are burning chametz, and it's hefkerut, but there the fire department was in charge, and they made sure that no plastics went in. And I remember seeing people taking unopened boxes of pasta, unopened boxes of pasta, and with their kids tossing it into the fire. Now they want to be machmir. They want to be stringent. They don't want to rely on the sale of chametz.
Why can't they give it to a goy?
So of course, of course. So here they say, I want to be strict. I don't want to rely on the sale of chametz for chametz gamur. And some people have that stringency. Although when the chamim were talking about selling chametz, they were talking about selling chametz, real chametz, real leaven. And assuming that the sale is done properly and appropriately, it's not a legal fiction, but it's legal. In fact, this year, there was a story that some rabbi sent the Gentile he sold the chametz to go and take some. And Moriv Rabbi, Rav Tendler in Muncie, has been known to do that, to send the Gentile to take some nice scotch from his balabatim on Pesach, it belongs to the Gentile. So if it's a good sale, it's a legal sale. But if a person wants to be machmir and not sell chametz, okay, fine. But to burn or throw out perfectly good, unopened pasta, that's a tragedy. It's about tashrit. It's an isu. So here a person's being machmir in the area of chametz, and they want to sell chametz, but they're being lenient in Baal Tashrit. They could give it to an organization. And of course, now, Baruch Hashem, you have organizations both here and abroad that do collect chametz, Erev Pesach, chametz that people want to discard. Rather than throwing it away, they can give it away.
Yeah, but okay. You sell it. It's perfectly 100% kosher.
Right. But we're talking about people who don't want to sell it. They want to be stringent. Okay, be stringent. But be careful, because sometimes stringency in one area leads to a leniency in another. And sometimes when you're machmir, you're mekil on the mitzvah of v'hafta l'recha kamocha, or kavod abriot. Sometimes when you're machmir in one area, you're being, you know, sort of machmir at the expense of someone else. And that's not what chumrah is. Chumrah cannot be a burden to your community, your family, your spouse, your in-laws, right?
An example, let's say flour and pasta. If a couple, let's say, has a bag of flour and pasta in that house and they sold it, and the other couple won't eat in that house for a month because they didn't get rid of the flour and pasta.
Okay. So, you know, being machmir at someone else's expense, you have the classic example. You have the classic example of the Hasid Shote. Okay? It appears in the Gemara, Masechet Sota, and Daf Chof Aleph, Amud Bet, where the Gemara defines a Hasid Shote, literally, you want to call him a pious imbecile. I want to define it as false piety. It's piety at someone else's expense. The Hasid Shote, the Gemara says, is someone who sees a woman drowning in the river. And she's saying, save me. But he says, no, I'm sorry. I don't look at women. Right? Dangerous is false piety. And Tosafot there cites the Yerushalmi that brings a different example where there's a baby drowning in the river. And the Hasid Shote says, oh, first I'm gonna take off my tefillin. I don't want to get them wet. I'm going to take off my tefillin and then I'll go in. And by the time he takes the tefillin off, the Gemara says the child has died. That's a Hasid Shote. And obviously that's an extreme example. But you see a lot of false piety here in Eretz Yisrael, unfortunately. You know, you go on the buses, right? And many men won't sit next to women.
Yeah.
Okay? But do those same men stand up for an elderly person, for an older person when they come on the bus? That's the question. Do those same men sit up in those seats in front that are reserved for senior adults?
If I see two men, one sits here, one is there, I say, please sit over there.
So Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Tshuva rules that it's permissible to sit next to a woman on a bus.
Yeah.
Wow, sounds radical, right? Wow.
So,
why? Because it's not derech chiba. It's not an intimate type of touching. You're sitting next to a woman. You're going one place. She's going where she needs to go. It's not romantic.
No.
It's not, you know, if you graze against her, chas v'shalom, it's not romantic. It's not intimate. It's not derech chiba. But if a person wants to be machmir, okay. If a person wants to be strict, fine. But also be strict for mipnei seva takum, right? Which, by the way, applies to male, female, Jew, Gentile alike, showing respect for the elderly. So it's a problem when keeping a chumrah comes at someone else's cheshbon, someone else's expense. There's a famous story. It's a similar idea. Martin Buber was once involved in some thinking or meditating, and he got a knock on the door, and it was a student of his who wanted to talk to him. And he just didn't have time because he was so focused on his own personal spiritual experience at that moment. Right? And then later, that student committed suicide. And he was devastated. And for the rest of his life, he really tried to be attuned to other people's needs, to be there for other people. But one's own spiritual reverie shouldn't come at anyone else's expense. One's avodat Hashem, it can't be.
Excuse me,
yeah.
You live in Harnoff, so you probably also get the situation. People knocking on the door in the evening when you're eating dinner or busy with other things. People collecting tzedakah for the poor, and sometimes they smoke. So if a person is collecting tzedakah for poor people and they have money to buy cigarettes, that's a contradiction. I think so.
I mean,
if they have money for cigarettes, what are they collecting
smoking,
money for? You know?
I will not give him a nagarok.
Excuse me, what?
If I see anybody smoking, I won't give him
a nagarok. Exactly.
So let's just come back to some of the parameters here.
You are not supposed to judge.
You can't impose, and it's similar in a sense. These things are all right. You can't impose your chumrah on someone else. Don't impose your chumrah onto someone else. It's a problem when a chumrah becomes a societal norm, when it becomes an expectation. And you see this also a lot today, especially here in Eretz Yisrael, where in certain groups, chumrah becomes the expectation. It's equated with frumkeit, the more machmir, the more frum. But it's a very superficial frumkeit. Because, you see, chumrah is really supposed to be something personal, something almost subjective. I can't tell you what to take on. You need to decide for yourself what you want to take on in your spiritual pursuits, in your avodat Hashem. And there's a Gemara at some point to, Gemara in Masechet Chulin, that discusses the amount of time that we wait between meat and milk. Some point to this Gemara and say this shows you that chumrah, stringency, is something that is personal, something that one decides for themselves. Now, according to our sages, the amount that one needs to wait between meat and milk, or the amount that one has to wait following eating meat before eating milk, is really the su'udata achrita, the next meal. And the question is, how do you define that time? What is called the next meal? And that's why there are different customs. But the Gemara says, and this is the Masechet Chulin and Daf Kuf Hei Amud Aleph, Amar Mar Ukva said, Ona laha milta, as for myself, concerning this thing, concerning waiting after eating meat, Chala bar chamra legabe abba. I am like vinegar compared to my father, who was like wine. My father was like wine concerning this. And I'm like vinegar. The ilu abba for my father, ki hava achil bischa ha'idna, if he would eat meat now, lo hava achil gvina ad lemachar ad hashta, he wouldn't eat milk until tomorrow, the same time. He would wait 24 hours. The ilu ana, but me, behasudata hu delo achilna l'sudata acharita. But for me, I wait till the following meal. Again, there are differences as to how to define what is the next meal. Without getting into that, it's not for now. But you see from here that my father had his standards. My father had his chumrah. But I follow the halacha. I follow what's required. Chumrah is personal. I can't impose my chumrah on you. Don't you impose your chumrah on me. Actually, there's a famous chumrah of the Maharam Mirotenberg, one of the great Rishonim. Actually, I was in Worms, Germany, a couple of months ago, and I was at the cemetery. I couldn't go inside, I'm a Kohen, but I was at the cemetery where the Maharam Mirotenberg is buried. Oh. And there's a famous story that the Maharam, he was once eating meat, and he found in his teeth some cheese from the previous meal. Now, after eating cheese, not hard cheese or aged cheese, but just regular cheese, a person has to rinse out their mouth, clean out their mouth. They might have to wash their hands, and then they can eat meat. They don't have to wait as long as one has to wait after eating meat. But the Maharam Mirotenberg, supposedly the story happened to him, and he has this cheese in his teeth. He discovers, and he's all upset. So he decided to wait 6 hours after eating cheese. He decided to take upon the stringency. Decided to take the stringency upon himself. The Maharshal, who is a great posek, lived in the 16th century, Rabbi Shlomo Luria, he is very upset with this practice of the Maharam Mirotenberg. He says, "How can you, impose this stringency?" Now, the truth is, the Maharam Mirotenberg never really imposed it on anyone. But again, there's this notion that you can take on a stringency, but don't impose it on anyone else.
You said 6 hours from the cheese to the meat, or the meat to the cheese?
That was a stringency of the Maharam Mirotenberg. He would wait 6 hours even after eating dairy. Okay? So the hard cheese or aged cheese, that's different. That's different. Again, we can't get into all the laws of basar b'chalav this morning. So I think this Gemara in Chulin is very powerful. You know, Ma'ukva says, you know, my father was like wine. Okay, I'm like vinegar. You know, he had his chumra. I follow the halacha. You know, the laws of Eruvin are very complex. Very complex. Eruvin. Very complex. And there's a lot of machloket amongst the Rishonim and Achronim as to how to construct an Eruv. And so some don't carry inside of an Eruv. They're strict. And in fact, you find in many communities where there is an Eruv, that the community will hold by the Eruv, but the rabbi of the community for himself, he won't. Unless he leaves the notes to his sermon in his house. Thank you. And that's because the rabbi might be strict, but he won't impose his chumrah on the community. Yes, Eruvin, the laws of Eruvin are very complicated, and there's a lot of machloket, and it's not pashut. Okay, I don't want to hold by the Eruv. But I'm not going to tell the families, the women, the children, to be strict like myself. That's not fair. There's a famous tshuva of Rav Moshe, Yigot Moshe, Yoredeya Chelak Aleph, Siman Samech Bet, where he allows blended whiskeys. He permits blended whiskeys, but he writes that he is machmir on himself not to drink them. Okay, he writes, I'm machmir on myself not to drink them. Rav Moshe was very sensitive to chumrah, to stringency, not to imposing stringencies on others, even though he had stringencies himself, of course. Except, he said, I'm machmir, I won't drink them unless I'm with people, and they're looking at me, and they pour me a l'chaim. In that case, I'll be lenient, and I'll drink. Because it might look like yuhara, which we'll define in just a moment. I don't want to appear like I'm above everyone else. Okay? So the Mishnah is very sensitive to this. I permit blended whiskeys. I personally am machmir. I won't drink them, but if I'm at a simcha, and people are drinking them, and they pour me one, I won't say I'm too frum. Okay? It's a concept of yuhara, showing off. Chumra should not be about religious one-upmanship. We have this concept of yuhara, which the chamim are often sensitive to. You know, flaunting one's piety, bringing attention to oneself. That's called yuhara. And the Mishnah in the second perek of Masechet Brachot says that a chatan, a bridegroom, on his wedding night is exempt from reciting Kriyat Shema. His head is elsewhere. He's tarud b'mitzvah. He's focused on the mitzvah of having relations with his wife, and he's not going to have the proper kavanah, the proper focus on reciting Shema. You need kavanah to say Shema. So the last Mishnah, the second perek, it says that chatan im ratza likrot kriyat Shema laila harishon kore. That if he wants to, however, read the Kriyat Shema on the wedding night, then he can read it. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel omer, lo kol harotze litol et Hashem itol. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel says that not everyone who wants to just take Hashem's name can take Hashem's name. In other words, how this is explained, it's yuhara. Don't think you're so frum. Mishnah says, well, if a chatan is able to concentrate, if he thinks, I can have the proper kavanah, I can read. No, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel says, it's not possible. Who do you think you are? You think you'll have enough kavanah? That's called showing off. Now, what's really funny is that Tosfot, on the Gemara there, says that today it's just the opposite case. It's completely reverse. Today, everyone is required to say the Shema, because no one at any time has that amount of Kavanah. The whole year you don't have that amount of Kavanah that's necessary. So when people had real Kavanah back then, so the Chatan was Tarud B'mitzvah, for him to say, even though tonight's my wedding night, I'm going to say Shema, that's showing off. Don't flaunt your piety. You're exempt. That's Yuhara. Not everyone can just take Hashem's name. But nowadays, since none of us have the proper intent, says Tosfot, right? That following this Mishnah and saying that, what, I'm not going to say Shema, that's called Yuhara. That's called showing off. It's the complete opposite. It's just, it's kind of comical. But it shows that being stringent is something that needs to be done in private, not supposed to be flaunted. Okay? You know, many have the custom to wear the tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam. We have the tefillin of, we call them the tefillin of Rashi, tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam. They predate, right, by many, many years, Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. It has to do with the order of the parshiot inside the tefillin. So we paskin, like Rashi, like Rambam, that order, okay? But to be strict, maybe it's like Rabbeinu Tam, so some people wear two pairs of tefillin, okay? Reb Chaim of Volozhin says that, about his Rebbe, the Gaon of Vilna, the Gra, the Gra didn't wear tefillin shel Rabbeinu Tam. Why? Because if he had to be concerned for every possible shita, if he was choshesh, if he was concerned for every possible way of making the tefillin, he would have to wear 64 pairs of tefillin. But in any case, the custom stuck many wear tefillin shel Rashi, tefillin shel Rabbeinu Tam. However, the Shulchan Aruch writes that Rabbeinu Tam tefillin should only be worn by someone who is muhsak umifusam b'chassidut, someone who is known to be pious, who's at that level. So there's another element as well. You know, you can't show off, you can't flaunt your piety, you can't flaunt your chumrah. At the same time, you also have to recognize where you are. You know, okay, you see this tzaddik, you know, this righteous individual, this great rabbi who does something kind of peculiar. You know, he wears, I don't know, like 100 different pairs of tzitzit or something. Or, you know, so don't be such a tzaddik. Don't think that you need to go ahead and put on 100 pairs of tzitzit. Who knows why he does? Who knows why? You know, a person has to understand where they're at as well. On the one hand, you can't flaunt your piety, but you also have to recognize that it may be inappropriate where you are in your religious observance to take on additional stringencies. If a person is struggling just to do all of the, you know, tayag mitzvot appropriately, there's no place for stringencies. Stringencies are where a person wants to, you know, go that extra mile. Go above and beyond. Make sure you're fulfilling the status quo before you go that extra mile. Okay, fine. And that becomes accepted. Chassidei Chabad, for instance, get their Rabbeinu Tam when they're 13. So you have a little kid who's wearing two pairs of tefillin. The Shulchan Aruch says you have to be muhsak, mufoksam, v'chassidut. I don't know how they answer that, but that's their custom. And the truth of the matter is, there is, aside with Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, aside from the concern that, aside from the halachic concern, the concern that maybe Rabbeinu Tam is right, so I want to be choshesh for that dea as well, okay, in Hasidut there's this added Kabbalistic dimension, that Kabbalistically, Rashi tefillin represents one thing, I'm not going to get into it, Rabbeinu Tam tefillin represents the other thing, so you have to wear both to... There's some additional Kabbalistic significance there that's attributed or imbued into the practice. And that's what Hasidim wear. And most Hasidim get their Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin when they're married, so they're already a little older. But without getting lost in this, yeah.
Rav Mordechai used to wear them both together at the same
time. Okay, some Kabbalists do as well. The Mishnah says there's room on the head for two pairs of tefillin. The Rush talks about that. And the concern is, and that seems to be what the Shulchan Aruch is saying when he says, you know, you put them both on and you make a bracha and you say, if Rashi is correct, so let these be tefillin and the others are just straps and boxes. And if Rabbeinu Tam is correct, then let the other ones just be straps and boxes. And that sort of condition seems to only make sense if you're putting on the two at the same time. But you have to have the small ones made, the very small ones made, which they make now. Not the like old small ones that that tourists buy that aren't so at a tourist shop that aren't so kosher, but the real small ones. But yeah, people wear them at the same time, and you see Kabbalists doing that. And there's a question there too. Maybe that's yuhara. Maybe that's showing off to wear two at the same time. So that's why some people who wear two at the same time will cover the Rabbeinu Tam. Judaism is not about flaunting piety, just the opposite. You know, you have, for instance, the Machatzita Shekel, where everyone brought the same amount. Didn't matter whether you were rich, poor, everyone brought a half a shekel. You have, for instance, at the end of Parshat Naso, the Korbanot of the Nisim, which inaugurated the Mishkan, and the Torah there, Torah doesn't waste any words. Torah does not waste any words. The Torah there spends 70, 80 psukim, over and over again, telling us what the Nisim, the princes, brought as part of the sanctification of the Mishkan, right? They all brought the same exact thing. One silver bowl, one silver basin. A bowl, both filled with flour and oil for a mincha. One golden ladle full of incense. An ola offering consisting of a bull, a ram, a sheep. A sin offering consisting of a goat. Zevach Shlamim, a festive peace offering consisting of two cows, five rams, five goats, and five sheep. And the Midrash describes as to what the symbolism is there. But, so why doesn't the Torah just say, and that's what each of them brought? Why does the Torah repeat this long list for each and every tribe over and over and over again? So one answer, different answers, different approaches, but one answer is that they all brought the same thing because it wasn't about one-upmanship. It wasn't about showing off. It wasn't about trying to outdo one another. And a chumrah can't be about trying to outdo one another. What's today?
Tu B'Av,
right? According to the last Mishnah in Tanit, it's the happiest day on the Jewish calendar. And the Mishnah there describes that the maidens would go wearing white, and they would go into the fields, and they would make shiduchim. And the Gemara explains why it's such a happy day. The Gemara at the end of Masechet Tanit. But the Mishnah says something interesting. They all wore borrowed clothing. So the question is, why? The Mishnah answers, so they wouldn't be embarrassed. Okay? Who's rich? Who's poor? The Gemara goes on to say that the daughter of the king would switch dresses with the daughter of the Kohen HaGadol, and so on and so forth down the line, because it shouldn't be about status, it shouldn't be about class, it's not what marriage is supposed to be about, it's not what Judaism is about. And that's today, right? That's the message of today, Tu B'Av. Judaism is not about, it's not about showing off and flaunting and status. Just quickly, you know, there's another concept called being motzi la'az on the kadmonim. Your behavior, this is a Gemara in Masechet Gittin, your behavior can't speak poorly or reflect poorly on previous generations. Don't think you are frommer than your parents and your grandparents and your great-grandparents and the sages of previous generations. I remember that when my wife and I were getting married, we met with the caterer, who was at the time based in Lakewood, and a very strict hashgacha. And we were talking about desserts. And so he passed a comment like, oh, I'm not allowed to serve strawberries or raspberries. What do you mean you're not allowed to serve strawberries? Oh, bug infestation. Okay, to say that we're going to scrub them, to say that we're going to check them, but you're not going to serve them? Right? So as my Rebbe likes to say, some people outlawed broccoli. So my Rebbe likes to say, in Parshat Shmini, where the Torah lists all the forbidden birds that we're not allowed to eat, broccoli is not one of them. Okay? So there's a concept of being motzi la'az on the kadmonim. Somehow your actions, by you taking on this stringency or this restriction, it reflects poorly on previous generations. And that also is a problem. I'll tell you what I think the problem is. Once upon a time, rabbis would struggle to find solutions. Today, rabbis struggle to find problems. I once heard the story from Moriv Rabbi Teller, who's the son-in-law of Moshe Feinstein, that once Simchat Torah, there was a member of the community who imbibed a little too much, and he went over to Rav Moshe, and he said, you know, Moshe, they always say that you're a meikir, you're lenient. Why are you always lenient? So afterwards, Moshe said to, he relayed the story to Moriv Rabbi, and asked, what? I should paskin against the halacha? It's not called being lenient. It's a concept of halacha. A person wants to be strict. Okay, in some circumstances, as we saw this morning, it's appropriate. It might be appropriate. V'amachmir tavo alav bracha. You want to be strict, gesund to hay, but it can't come at the expense of someone else. It can't come at the expense of another area of halacha. Anyone can be machmir. There's an expression at the beginning of Masechet Beitza, koach dehetera adif. The Gemara says that literally the strength of leniency is preferable. And what that means is that from the strength of an argument that's trying to prove a lenient position, you can learn a lot more. Because anyone can be machmir. Anyone can say it's asur, it's prohibited. But to try and show and prove how something is lenient, that takes lumdus. That takes skill. That takes chokhmah, knowledge. That takes even, a certain sensitivity, I would say. The Gemara emphasizes, we know that Beit Hillel was lenient, Beit Shammai was strict. Now, we weren't really talking about extra-legal chumrot. There they were talking about halacha. But Beit Hillel had a reputation for being lenient. Beit Shammai, stringent. Not always true. Sometimes Beit Hillel was stringent. The Gemara in Masechet Yevamot says that even though they differed on so many different things, even though Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai differed on so many areas of halacha, many affecting marriage itself, the children of Beit Hillel and the children of Beit Shammai would marry with one another. For our sages, they are the epitome or the paradigm of the machloket that's l'shem shamayim. So, you want to be machmir? Okay. But it has to be l'shem shamayim. Today, the class this morning is titled The Chumraization of the Jewish World. Today there's almost a yetzer hara that compels some to be stringent. They think they have to be machmir. I want to end with a fascinating passage, and it's fascinating for a number of reasons. As you'll see, it comes from the teachings of Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. Now, it's fascinating to me because here you'll see Rabbi Nachman decries against chumrah, and it seems to be really the opposite of today's Hasidic world, where in the Hasidic world today, you find many chumrot. And there seems to be a value placed on being machmir. And heaven forbid, chumrah seems to be, in some circles, equated with frumkeit. So I'll end with this. It says, this is his student recording his teachings. This is Sichot Haran, Conversations of Rabbi Nachman, Reish Lamed Hei, 235. Okay? Kvar Mevaer, Bilukute Tinyana, Simon Memdalet, Sherabbeinu Zichrono Levracha, our Rebbe, a blessed memory, he's here Me'od. He was very, very careful. He warned us, Livli Lachmir Chumrot Yiterot B'Shum Davar. A person should not take on stringencies in any area. Ki Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba B'Tchunya Im Briotav. Hashem is not so strict with his creations. The Torah wasn't given to angels. And he continues and says not to be strict even on Pesach. You know, Pesach, people are strict. And then he continues, and just for the sake of time, I'll summarize this outside. He continues that Rabbi Nachman mentioned once that he wanted to be strict on Pesach with regards to water. Now, some people have the stringency of filling up containers of water ahead of time, before Pesach begins, and using those containers of water throughout the holiday of Pesach. But he couldn't find the proper water. Now you see, the reason behind this chula is that on Pesach, okay, even things that are normally batel, even things that are normally nullified, okay, like chametz, on Pesach it's chozer v'ne'er. It awakens, so to speak. So even if you have a little speck of chametz in the water, it's a problem on Pesach itself. However, if it was from before Pesach, then it's permissible. So if your water was prepared before Pesach, it's not a problem. So Rabbi Nachman here, his student, records how he was struggling with this. He thought maybe he would bottle water up beforehand, or maybe he would find a free-flowing spring on Pesach, and he couldn't find it, and it made him all upset, and he wanted to be machmir. And from this, he learned, you shouldn't be strict. It's not appropriate. And in fact, he says, "Aval achshav hu mitlotzeis mizeh." He says, now he laughs at this. He laughs at these stringencies, taking on additional. And this is on Pesach. Ki ein tzuchin lechapes achar chumrot yiterot afilu bePesach. You shouldn't take on additional stringencies even on Pesach. Remember that when you're preparing next year. Could Rabbi Nachman write this today in Mea Sha'arim? I don't know. But he concludes with this, and this I'll read inside. This is the key. I'll end with this. Ki ikar ha'avodah be'emet hu tmimut u'pshitut. The essence of serving God is simplicity. L'harbot b'torah u'tfilah u'masim tovim. To be involved and to increase prayer, kind deeds. This goes to your concern in the back. That it's not about being strict. Judaism is about observing the Torah, engaging in acts of kindness, without engaging in all these additional stringencies, instead walking in the way of our ancestors. Judaism is not about asceticism. It's not about extremism. Judaism is not about fanaticism. Judaism is about balance. Well, Moshe Feinstein said that the first step in gadlus and gadlut, in greatness, is normal kite.
It is?
Normal kite. Being normal.
Be normal.
That's the first step. You want to be great? You want to be a gadol? Be normal. A chumrah can be meaningful in one's avodat Hashem if it is a personal act of piety, a private holy act between man and his creator, not to be flaunted, not at the expense of any other area of halacha, nor at the expense of another person. It's something that cannot be legislated, a pure expression of sincere devotion.